Track 19, The Crucifixion. Jesus said, "She was united to me in sorrow, because we were both on the cross. I with my body, she with her soul."
Maria Valtorta describes the scene on Calvary. The executioners offer the condemned men three rags so that they may tie them around their groins. The robbers take theirs, uttering the most horrible curses. Jesus, who strips himself slowly because of the pangs of the wounds, refuses. He perhaps thinks that he can keep on the short drawers, which he had on also during the flagellation. But when he is told to take them off as well, he stretches out his hand to beg for the rag of the executioners to conceal his nakedness. He is really the annihilated one, to the extent of having to ask for a rag of criminals. But Mary has noticed everything. She has removed the long, thin, white veil covering her head under her dark mantle, and on which she has already shed so many tears. And she gives it to John so that he may hand it to Longinus for her son. The centurion takes the veil without any objection, and when he sees that Jesus is about to strip himself completely, facing the side where there are no people, and thus turning his back, furrowed by bruises and blisters, towards the crowd, he gives him his mother's veil. Jesus recognizes it and wraps it around his pelvis several times, fastening it carefully so that it may not fall off. And on the linen veil, so far soaked only with tears, the first drops of blood begin to fall, because many of the wounds have reopened again as he stooped to take off his sandals and lay down his garments. The robbers are tied to their crosses, and they are carried to their places, one on the right and one on the left. They howl, swear, and curse. But no help is required for Jesus. He lies down and places his head where they tell him. He stretches out his arms and his legs as he was told. He only takes care to arrange his veil properly. Now his long, slender, white body stands out against the dark wood and the yellow ground. Two executioners sit on his chest and hold him fast. A third one takes his right arm, holding him with one hand on the first part of his forearm and the other on the tips of his fingers. The fourth one places the point of the nail on the wrist. He raises the hammer and gives the first stroke. Jesus, who had closed his eyes, utters a cry and has a contraction because of the sharp pain. And he opens his eyes, flooded with tears. The pain he suffers must be dreadful. The nail penetrates, tearing muscles, veins, nerves. Mary replies to the cry of her tortured son with a groan that sounds almost like the moaning of a slaughtered lamb. And she bends as if she were crushed, holding her head in her hands. In order not to torture her, Jesus utters no more cries, but the strokes continue, methodical and hard, iron striking iron. The right hand is now nailed. They pass on to the left one. The hole in the wood does not correspond to the carpus, so they take a rope. They tie it to the left wrist and they pull it until the shoulder joint is dislocated. They nail the hand where they can, that is, between the thumb and the other fingers, just in the middle of the metacarpus. But Jesus no longer utters cries. He only moans in a deep, hoarse voice, with his lips firmly closed, while tears of pain fall on the wood and then on the ground. It is now the turn of his feet. Jesus, with an involuntary movement, withdraws his legs upon seeing the very long nail. They weigh on his flayed knees and press on his poor bruised shins, and they hammer and hammer and hammer. The harsh noise of iron is accompanied by the low, plaintive lament of a dove, the hoarse groaning of Mary, who bends more and more at each stroke, as if the hammer wounded her, the martyr mother. But they are not the end. They are the beginnings of new sufferings. The cross is dragged near the hole, and it jerks on the uneven ground, shaking the poor crucified. The cross is raised, and twice it slips out of the hands of those raising it. The first time it falls with a crash. The second time it falls on its right arm, causing terrible pain to Jesus, because the jerk he receives shakes his wounded limbs. But when they let the cross drop into its hole, and before being made fast with stones and earth, it sways in all directions, continuously shifting the poor body hanging from three nails. The suffering must be atrocious. At long last the cross is made fast, and there is only the torture of being suspended. They raise the robbers who, once they are placed in a vertical position, shout as if they are being flayed alive. But Jesus is silent. The crowd, instead, is no longer silent, and the people resume bawling in a hellish way. Now the top of Golgotha has its trophy and its guard of honour, and soldiers throw dice for the garments of the condemned men. Longinus is standing upright between the cross of Jesus and the one on the right. He seems to be mounting guard of honour for the martyr king, and his piercing eye does not miss any detail. While looking, he sees Mary just under the slope, with her tormented face raised towards her son. He calls one of the soldiers who are playing dice and says to him, "If his mother wants to come up with the son who is escorting her, let her come. Escort her and help her." And Mary, with John, who is believed to be her son, climb the steps cut in the rock. They pass beyond the cordon of soldiers and go to the foot of the cross. The crowd showers the most disgraceful abuses on Mary at once, but with her trembling white lips she tries only to comfort Jesus with an anguished smile. Shouting further abuse, one of the crowd says, "Let us go to Lazarus. Let us nail him to the other side of the cross. There is Mary with Martha over there. Let us ask them where Lazarus is, and let us go and look for him." And while the other women, struck with terror, run behind the shepherds, Mary Magdalene comes forward, and finding in her grief the ancient boldness of her days of sin, she says, "Go, you will already find the soldiers of Rome in the mansion, with 500 armed men of my land, and they will castrate you like old billy goats, destined to feed the slaves of millstones." Longinus has given an order, and the 50 soldiers who were resting come into action, and they prick the buttocks of the first Judeans they find. The Judeans curse, but Rome is the stronger. The Magdalene lowers her veil again and goes back to her place. The other women join her. The robber on the left-hand side continues to insult from his cross. The other robber, Dismas, who has been weeping and murmuring, "My mother," says, "Be silent. Do you not fear God, even now that you suffer this pain? Why do you insult him who is so good? His torture is even greater than ours, and he has done nothing wrong." And when he hears that Mary is also included in the insult, he says, "Be silent. Remember that you were born of a woman, and consider that our mothers have wept because of their sons. I would like to ask mine to forgive me, but shall I be able? She was a holy woman. I killed her with the sorrow I gave her. I am a sinner, and who will forgive me? Mother, in the name of your dying son, pray for me." The mother, for a moment, raises her tortured face and looks at him, and she seems to caress him with her kind, gentle eyes. Dismas weeps louder, and Jesus speaks for the first time, "Father, forgive them, because they do not know what they are doing." This prayer overcomes all fear in Dismas. He dares to look at the Christ and says, "Lord, remember me when you are in your kingdom. It is just that I should suffer, but give me mercy and peace hereafter. I heard you speak once, and I foolishly rejected your word. I now repent, and I repent of all my sins before you, the Son of the Most High. I believe that you come from God. I believe in your power. I believe in your mercy. Christ, forgive me in the name of your mother and of your most holy Father." Jesus turns his head around and looks at him with deep compassion, and he smiles a still beautiful smile with his poor tortured lips. He says, "I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise." The repentant robber calms down, and the other robber continues cursing. The sky becomes duller and duller, and the light is becoming greenish. Jesus seems to be turning ominously livid because of a beginning of putrefaction, as if he were already dead. His head begins to hang over his chest. His strength fails him rapidly. He shivers, although he is burning with fever. In his weakness, he whispers, "Mother, mother." Mary makes an unrestrainable gesture of stretching out her arms as if she wished to succour him. And the cruel people laugh. It is in this frightening twilight that Jesus gives John to Mary and Mary to John. He lowers his head because the mother has gone closer to the cross to see him better, and he says, "Woman, this is your son. Son, this is your mother." Mary looks even more upset after this word, which is the will of Jesus. Tears stream down her cheeks, notwithstanding all her efforts to refrain them, even if on her lips there is a heartbroken smile to comfort him. Jesus' sufferings increase more and more, and the light fades more and more. At a certain moment, Jesus collapses forwards and downwards, as if he were already dead. He no longer pants. His head hangs forward, and his body, from his hips upwards, is completely detached from the cross. Mary utters a cry, "He is dead!" A tragic cry that spreads in the dark air, and Jesus seems really dead. darkness becomes deeper. Jerusalem disappears completely. The very slopes of Calvary seem to vanish, and only the top is visible. And from that light, which is no longer light, comes the plaintive voice of Jesus, "I am thirsty." A soldier goes towards a jar with vinegar and gall. He takes the sponge immersed in the liquid and offers it to the dying victim. Jesus leans eagerly forward towards the approaching sponge. Mary, leaning on John, says with a moan, "Oh, and I cannot give him even one of my tears. God, why do you abandon us like this?" Jesus makes a wry face in disgust. He withdraws, loses heart, and abandons himself. And fainter comes the invocation, "Mother." The poor wretch whispers, "Yes, darling, I'm here." Then his sight becomes misty and makes him say, "Mother, where are you? I can't see you anymore. Are you abandoning me too?" But they are not even words, just a murmur. She says, "No, no, son, I will not abandon you. Listen to me, my dear. Your mother is here, she is here, and she only regrets that she cannot come to where you are." It is heartrending. And John weeps openly. Jesus must hear him weep, but he does not say anything. Longinus is now standing stiff at attention, his left hand on his sword, his right one held against his side, as if he were on the steps of the imperial throne. And his eyes begin to shine with tears that only his iron discipline can refrain. There is dead silence. Then, in utter darkness, the words, "Everything is accomplished," are clearly heard, and his death rattle grows louder and louder. There is silence again. Then the supplication pronounced with infinite kindness, with fervent prayer, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." Further silence. Then there is the last spasm of Jesus, a dreadful convulsion that seems to tear the body with the three nails from the cross, and a powerful cry, unimaginable in that exhausted body, bursts forth, rending the air. It is the loud cry mentioned by the Gospels, the first part of the word "mother," and nothing else. His head falls on his chest, his body leans forward, the trembling stops. He breathes no more, he has breathed his last. The earth replies to the cry of the murdered innocent with a frightening rumble. The summit of Golgotha trembles, and it shakes the three crosses so violently that they seem on the point of being overturned. John grasps a cross with one arm, and the other supports Mary. The robbers howl with terror. People fall one on top of one another. The earthquake and the tornado recur three times. Then there is the absolute immobility of a dead world. Mary raises her head from John's chest and looks at her Jesus. She calls him three times, "Jesus, Jesus, Jesus." Then, as a flash forms a kind of crown over the top of Golgotha, she sees him, motionless, all bent forward, with his head hanging. She stretches out her hands in the dark air and shouts, "My son, my son, my son." John embraces Mary and tries to take her away, saying, "He no longer suffers." But before the apostle finishes his sentence, Mary, who has understood, frees herself. She turns around. She bends towards the ground. She covers her eyes with her hands and shouts, "I no longer have my son." Longinus approaches John, and in a low voice he says something to him which I do not understand. Then he makes the soldier give him a lance. He looks at the women, all attending to Mary, who is slowly recovering her strength. They all have their backs turned towards the cross. Longinus places himself in front of the crucified. He ponders carefully how to deal the blow, and he strikes. The lance penetrates deeply from the bottom upwards, from right to left. "It is done, my friend," says Longinus, and he ends, "Better so, as for a knight, and without fracturing bones. He was really a just man." A lot of water and just a trickle of blood, already tending to clot, dripped from the wound.